Today I'm reading from John 15, 9 through 17, if you'd like to follow along with me. As the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandment and abided in his love. I have said these things to you so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. No one has greater love than this, to lay down one's life for one's friend. You are my friends if you do what I command you. I do not call you servants any longer because a servant does not know what the master is doing, but I have called you friends because I have made known to you everything that I have heard from my Father. You did not choose me, but I choose you. But I chose you. And I appointed you to go and bear fruit, fruit that will last, so that the Father will give you whatever you ask him in my name. I am giving you these commandments so that you may love one another.
Gosh, it was hard to be away from you. Those of you who have been around Fairview for a long time met me 12 years ago this month during the candidating process as the search committee introduced me to the various groups of the church, a couple of house parties at Mimi's Cafe, and of course, right here in this very sanctuary, where I preached my candidating sermon 12 years ago tomorrow, and you voted to call me as your pastor. 12 years is a long time. I was still in my 20s back then, barely. I was like holding on at 29. But now I'm in my 40s. That means that I've been the pastor at this church for three different decades of my life. I was a single woman when I met you, for the better part of our lives, really. It was you, or at least a designated few of you, who went on a mission. It was supposed to be a mission to Guatemala, and it was, but sometimes I wonder if the mission was actually to marry our pastor. And if it was, mission accomplished. Marquise and I just celebrated one of our anniversaries on May 2nd, where 17 clergy blessed our marriage, and we stood in front of all of you right here to say, I do, to one another. You welcomed Molly into this world, and you have loved on her, living out that African proverb that says it takes a village to raise a child. And now you get to raise two. Of mine, anyways. We've got a whole bunch of them here. So as hard as it is to return back to work, I'm happy that I finally get the opportunity to introduce Micah to our community. He was here last week. I don't know where he is right now. I think he's going to walk through the doors any minute now, or be pushed through the doors any minute now. But it was really hard to be away from you. It's really hard when we're so much a part of each other's lives. Yet, I realized that to go on leave meant I needed to step back from you, to draw some boundaries, to focus inward on our little family. But it was hard to do, because not only do I love my job, I love you. That's actually my job. It's to love you and to lead this community that seeks to love one another and then go out and share that love beyond these walls. I love that. And I love you. I love that together we practice loving each other here in this space so that we can master the act of loving and then go do it beyond these doors in the places where it's hard, sometimes our homes with our families or when we're the strangers or people that we don't like. Hardest sometimes of all is with ourselves. But the nice thing about church, this church in particular, is that we get to intentionally choose to engage in this act of love here, in this safe space, this holy sanctuary, so that we can do it where and when it's hard. That's just one of the reasons I love this place so much, and why it was so hard for me to be away. It was difficult for me. I'm so used to going to church. It's so much a part of my life. So even though I had the chance to worship elsewhere, which I appreciate and find meaningful, if for nothing else, that it's research for when I come back. But the truth is, a big part of church is not just the act of going, the ritual, the word, the song. It's the people. It's the people that make up church. It's you. So it was hard. It was hard to be gone from the people that I love. I knew I had to be cognizant of boundaries, and I understood the importance of letting go and focusing on my baby. But it was hard because I missed you. And I just wanted you all to be with us in this little happy baby bubble as we loved on Micah. We worshiped IUCC a couple of times, and we celebrated Easter at Claremont. But I just wanted to be here. One time I snuck in before Micah was born, and of course you probably know that Marquise and Molly did come without us because it didn't seem right to keep Molly away from her church family just because I was on leave. This time away has made me realize how truly important this church is in our family's life, how much we love you as a family and the family that we have here at FCC. So I'm obviously glad to be back. Now, I just want to say, parenthetically, I suppose, that it's going to be hard to do part-time because there's no such thing as part-time ministry, just like there's no such thing as part-time lovin'. So you're going to have to bear with me during these next 2 months as I sort of wade back in. I started to think about this boundary drawing thing because it's the 21st century and everybody loves boundaries, and I get it. I understood why I needed to be gone, why it might be a bad idea for me to come to church every week and think about church things on a constant basis. Because it's not just my job, though. It's my everything. My job is to love, and that doesn't stop. Can't go on leave from that. I love you all the time. You're my friends. You're my family. But in clergy circles, we talk a lot about being friends with our congregants, and it's kind of a taboo thing to do. This may or may not come as a surprise to you, but it's why this whole boundary thing is kind of gray, if you ask me, because if we're mandated to love, if it's our job, in fact, to love our congregation, shouldn't we also be friends? Because after 12 years, it is hard not to be. Now, this might raise a few eyebrows with my colleagues, but it was Jesus who first said those radical words and set up this kind of relationship. I have called you friends. Radical, you say? Is it really so radical to have friends? I mean, come on. I've got over 1,000 on Facebook. How radical could it be? Perhaps we become numb to friendship, having friended thousands of people on social media, some we've never met, others who are friends of friends, or some people we just bump into and think we'd like to keep in contact with them. Friending is following someone, liking their funny posts, hearting the pics of their cute kids or shared HuffPo articles. But I'm not here to knock social media, minus the part about Zuckerberg knowing everything about our lives and permitting the Russian bots to brainwash us. I actually love Facebook. And I do feel closer to people because we share a friendship on Facebook. I feel like Gerlinda and Nathan aren't really a continent away for most of the year because we get this little window into each other's lives. Or I think about Erica Racca, who's been in Boston for something like the last 5 years. I can't believe it's been so long. But she doesn't seem so far away. I know she's at the Kentucky Derby this weekend, and she looks like she's having a lot of fun despite the rain. The mint juleps look like she's enjoying them. Or even the people who are here, those of you who are here, I know that you've been up to this week. I know that Caden has joined a new cadet program, and that Carrie recently went on a multi-day solo hike. Can you believe that? And this weekend, she's in Santa Barbara with Juniper, a.k.a. Darby. And I know that Keith was off at his Howie conference. I'm not here to knock this new form of friendship, because I like it. But I wonder if the ease of friending someone on social media and the high volume of friends we have somehow cheapens our understanding of friendship. Do we take it for granted? Because when Jesus called his disciples friends, it was actually a pretty big deal. It was huge. Now, you and I have talked a lot about what a radical statement it was for Jesus to call us brothers and sisters with God as our parent. And that is radical. Jesus reimagined God as not a faraway God, a mere creator who made the world and then took off, or an authoritative boss or a puppeteer that pulls the strings, but as a parent, a father, an Abba, Jesus said, like a daddy. And then Jesus said that God wasn't just his parent alone, that he wasn't the only son, but that all of us could view God that way because we are all brothers and sisters, each on equal footing. That's radical. But then he does something here that's even more bold, more radical. It goes further. Now, it might not seem all that dramatic when you read it. In fact, I think it sounds pretty ordinary, pretty mundane. Jesus is my friend. I mean, yeah, we got a lot of friends, right? Jesus the Superman is a whole lot better, but Jesus my friend kind of feels bland. It doesn't really sound like groundbreaking theology, does it? But what's happening in this passage is that Jesus takes away the hierarchy. This is big. This is dramatic. This is bold. This is radical. Even groundbreaking. But you have to read it. You have to listen. You have to look. Because for many Christians, it's the hierarchy that makes Jesus so special. You know, they like to see it like this: God, Jesus, us. Or Catholics will add in Mary and the saints in between here so that someone else can be the go-between to do our bidding because Jesus is that high, that elevated, that holy and sacred. But regardless of whether we're Catholic or Protestant, we all kind of set up these levels. We see Jesus as above us. That's why we pray to Jesus, whether we go through an intermediary saint or not. We see Jesus as more than ourselves. We hear this phrase all the time, right? Jesus is Lord. And yet, you get to this passage, in the Gospel of John, no less, where Jesus puts up his hand like a big red stop sign and says, "Whoa, hold on there. Don't call me Lord. I'm no longer your master. You are not mere servants anymore." Oh, this is uncomfortable. Christians have been calling Jesus Lord for 2 millennia. Maybe we missed this passage. I mean, think of all the songs. Lord, I want to be a Christian. Here I am, Lord. Yes, Lord. Yes, Lord. Yes, yes, Lord. You mean Jesus didn't want us to call him Lord? Oh, this is awkward. All those songs, all those prayers, all those years and years and years. Did we all just skip over this? Maybe we just weren't ready for it. Maybe we skipped over it because the truth is we prefer it the other way. We want Jesus to lord over us, to be on top of us in the hierarchical structure of the universe, of morality, of authority. We want Jesus to be in charge because if he isn't, what does that mean? It means we have to take responsibility. But we want Jesus in charge. Jesus, take the wheel. Jesus, take the wheel. There are so many songs, so many songs. It means that the lines are not clearly defined. It's not God, arrow to Jesus, arrow to saints, arrow to Pope, arrow to us. It's all blurred out. It's messy. Jesus wants to be our friend. Jesus wants to be on the same level as us. And it's not because Jesus wants out of the hierarchy, like he doesn't want the responsibility, like it's too hard for him and he doesn't want to bear the weight. No, he carried the burden. He can hold his own weight. He can hold the weight of the world. It's that he wants us to come with him. He wants us to share in the responsibility because he believes that we can. He knows that we have everything we need to let God into our lives, and in doing so, to let love loose in the world. Jesus doesn't want to lord over us. He wants the very opposite. He wants to empower us to be like him, to be with him, to serve alongside him, to share in the hard work and relish in the sweet, sweet joy. He wants us to live in the light. And then he wants us to carry that light out into the world. I have called you friends. He wants to be our friend. Not our Lord, not our master, our friend. In friendship, one person doesn't have power over the other. One person doesn't get to wield authority. In friendship, there's an implied reciprocity. In friendship, there's an expectation that we're going to care for one another, that we'll share responsibility, not because we do what the boss says, or even because we're co-workers, or we're like parents that kind of have to have that hierarchical responsibility to care for their children. Friendship isn't like that. Friendship is not because we have to, not because our status demands it, but because we want to, because we like each other, maybe even love each other. Jesus says it right here. We're friends. I haven't kept anything from you. You know what I know. And now you get to go forward and bear the fruit of what I've shared with you, and you get to share it with others. Friends, go make more friends. It's always so much easier, though, if Jesus has the one up on us. You know, I mean, we say we want to know what's going on. We want the power. We say we want to be like Jesus. But there's a part of us, if we're honest, we have to admit we kind of like it when someone else is in charge. It's easier when we're a step below on the ladder, when we won't have to worry about anything, when we don't have to hold all the cards, when we can't possibly call the shots. But Jesus, oh Jesus, he did it again. He goes and blurs the lines. Of course he does. He always does. We want him to be Lord, to make it easy for us, but he calls us friends. Friends. Now, I love my family. I've been pretty lucky with the lot I was born into. Not everybody is, I know that. But I love my family, and I actually like them, too. They're the kind of people that I want to be friends with. You see, when family become friends, something powerful happens. The bond is deeper than even the blood that ties them. And when friends become family, brother and sister take on new meaning. This is a family of friends here at Fairview Community Church. We are family, all God's children, but we are also friends in this together, sharing in the responsibility, the joy, the tears sometimes, when the load is light and when the burden is heavy. Friend, I'm here for laughter and tears, to comfort and challenge, to love. I have called you friends, he says. I have called you friends. So when he finally gets to that night, when they're all gathered at the table, and they're looking for instruction, they're looking for direction from their teacher, they're ready to obey the master, they prefer to be the lambs to their shepherd than have to sit side by side and look in Jesus' eye and eat the same bread and drink the same cup. Because he has said, now we are the same, you and me. We are friends. We are in this together. Are you in this together? He asks, are you, my friend, in this? with me? Because I've laid it all out. You know what I know. I have held nothing back. I have called you my friends. Come, friend, follow me. Come to the table, drink of my cup, eat of my bread together, side by side. And love shall be the mark of our ministry. Amen.